Greetings, Sam Gillen with EduWave Talk Radio. We've had some pretty interesting things going on. I just got back from Hawaii. I've missed my show, and I'm glad to be back. And we had so many incredible things. It being a show in itself to just cover everything we've experienced. But we met with all the major kahunas and the healers, and we're island hopping, and just had some incredible, you know, events happen with certain Tibetan lamas and yogis, and it just went on and on and on. But I sent an email out. If you want to sign up on the email list, we can give you the rest of the information on that trip. But it was a phenomenal trip, and it was just very exciting, and it's just one thing after another. It was totally orchestrated and, you know, got a lot done on the trip. Anyway, we'll fill you in on the details on that on the email list if you want to get on the email list. There's a lot of exciting things coming up. We've got a full moon tonight, and I know people are probably getting a little antsy and coming unglued and feeling a lot of energy coming in. We're definitely feeling that here. It definitely changes during the wind. And on that note, what better guest than Dale Groff, who is a physicist, a former director of Project Stargate. It's a government program that investigated remote viewing phenomenon. He's been appeared on ABC Nightline, Paranormal Borderline, CNN, several TV documentaries on remote viewing, A&E. I can go on and on, but I really want to get into the information, so we'll just welcome Dale on the show. Dale, are you with us?
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Oh, I'd be delighted to.
You know, there's so many areas we could go with this. You know, I almost don't even know where to start, but let's just start in the beginning. How did you get into the remote viewing project?
Yeah, you know, it's very difficult to have a straight line answer in that. There's a lot of circuitous things went on in my life. I think I've always been interested in the general nature of psychic phenomenon, even though I chose a career in engineering and physics. But it's ironic that you're talking so much about your experiences in Hawaii as you began the program. I think that was really the time when I lived in Hawaii in 1968 that I really started taking a hard look at this phenomenon, and I began to realize that there's more to reality than what my physics courses presented to me. Because in Hawaii, I had some really incredible experiences. I lived there in 68 and 69, during the part of the Vietnam situation. Mm-hmm. So it was during that period, I did do a lot of research in the Bishop Library, and became very interested in the kahuna approach to life, and particularly the healing aspects. And I hadn't really thought a lot about the extrasensory part, but I was thrown into that one. And this is what kind of led me into, ultimately, the Stargate program and remote viewing. But I almost drowned in the surf on the beach at Makapu Point, I believe it was called. Mm-hmm. I can't remember the name right now. And I had a very fortunate experience, in a way, not just getting out of the surf, but also finding somebody that there was no way I could have known that that individual was in the water in the high waves. So I was able to actually locate that person and bring her back, as well as myself. Uh-huh. And there was a lot of incredible things happened during that traumatic situation. And so when I recovered, in a way, psychologically from that, it took me weeks to get over the experience. I couldn't believe I was alive. Then I decided, really, there's something to this extrasensory world. And I began researching it. I studied the works from Dr. Ryan at Duke University, and the ESP card testing approach, and a lot of other things that I had never heard of before, which really shocked me, because how could such an incredibly important topic not be more widely discussed in academia or elsewhere? So that really got me interested in it. And then I began a series of experiences with dreams. And it was the dreams then, in conjunction with that earlier experience in Hawaii, that really opened me up to the field. And a lot of synchronicities happened, and ultimately I became connected with the remote viewing research. But I'll pause for now to see if you have any questions on what I've already said.
Uh-huh. Yeah, well, yeah, there's a few. That's kind of what woke me up. I had a drowning experience as well.
Oh, really?
How
about that? What area? What part of the world?
I was actually in California by Little Corona, and they had some sneaker waves come in, and nobody was ready for them, and it just, after about the third wave hit me, there were 25-foot waves came in just out of the blue. And, you know, I went through the tunnel and had a little conversation in the in that golden realm, you know, and then came back, and that's what launched my program into all of this as well.
Amazing. And actually, you know, it was such a traumatic thing trying to get out of that surf, because not only was I trying to get myself out of it, but also this woman that was also out there, which I hadn't known was out there, that I found through an intuitive response. And on the way back, trying to get out of there, and of course I knew all the technical ways of getting out of rip currents. You don't struggle against the current or go to shore directly. You go parallel. So I did all the good things, and even then it was extremely difficult. And I must have had something like an out of body experience during this trauma, and it was almost like I was above myself, watching myself trying to get back to shore, and it was through this higher position of viewpoint, you might call it, I was able to actually time my strokes and angle ourselves in the right way, so that I would minimize the energy and maximize the probability of getting back, I guess you might say. So it was a combination of things. But afterwards, I found that I was able, my dream life opened up, and I started to recall dreams very easily. And it was in this dream world that I found a lot of other things happening, like premonitions and anticipating what would be happening the next day and so on. And it became a very useful thing to have on reserve, you might say, because things were pretty traumatic in those days, and particularly in the job assignment I had. And I was able to actually anticipate some things and avoid some problems because of what the dreams presented the night before.
Oh, great. I had a few of those, and whenever I didn't listen to them, you know, I would have the experience, and I go, damn, why didn't I act on that? You know, and even when I did act on them, it still happened, but, you know, I tried to avoid it, and one time I put myself in that position, you know, it seemed to be, seemed to manifest.
Yeah, a lot of the things that I experienced were very mundane, you know, like a problem with a car, and, you know, then I'd look under the hood and there was a certain issue developing that I hadn't consciously been aware of, even though there might have been some subliminal clues I just didn't ignore, but it was presented more clearly in a dream. Or certain things at the office, in the analytical work I was doing at that time in air defense analysis, where I would actually see a solution to a problem, which I didn't even know there was a problem until the next day or a couple of days later. There was the problem, and I was able to actually get right down to the heart of the solution real quick, and in one or two cases nobody even believed it until later on I was able to get the right kind of backup data. So somehow our dreaming minds can really reach out in dimensions that we just can't possibly anticipate, yet it happens, so we have to accept that reality and go with it. So that's what I've been trying to do, you know, throughout my life, is from that time in Hawaii, to actually accept this reality that we are immersed in, and work with it to our benefit and the benefit of others too. And I would imagine you've been in that same position many times.
Yes. Have you ever wondered if it was maybe your future self that actually went through the experience and was your let's say your car broke down, you're stuck on the highway, and then it's actually talking to you back in time and saying, "Hey, take care of this, so you don't have to have this same experience."
I often wondered about how these premonitions work. And I'm inclined to think that perhaps most of the psi phenomenon are a form of precognition where, like you say, we seem to be ahead of ourselves somehow, mm-hmm. in some kind of alternate reality, if you want to use that term. And in this alternative or alternate reality, we can actually move into a position which is ahead in time. It's an aspect of ourselves. You, mm-hmm. like you said, it might be something like our future selves looking back in time after us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it sounds crazy, but maybe we do. We are ahead more than we realize that there's a huge projection in the universe, an alternative universe, if you will, that has these features that we can then be like a future self.
Mm-hmm.
So it's something like that. I've seen too many instances, not just in my own life, but with people I work with. I do experiments in precognition with a few people. And in some cases, the projects that I've set up, there's absolutely, or we try to anticipate through our precognitive abilities, whether it's a dreaming mind in the future, or whether or not we are awake in intending to perceive the future, like through a remote viewing mode. And I have had projects show up when I'm working on the future newspapers, what articles are going to be appearing in the future news.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had some success with that, but not too far ahead in time. Within 5 days,
mm-hmm.
generally, is about as far as I'm willing to put money on right now. I'm not saying that that's, you know, some kind of universal limit, but from my experience. And maybe it's because I'm just too impatient. I can't wait, you know, a month or two to find out if the premonition was true or not. You know, maybe.
Yeah, what was the main focus in the government program? Was that during the Vietnam era? It probably had something to do with the military, or
yeah. Well, not really. When we started on the remote viewing work, that was in the mid '70s, early mm-hmm. to mid '70s. And the main focus on that area was, well, there were two aspects to it. One was to do some research into the phenomenon from a technical point of view. Could there be something like electromagnetics, as we know, electromagnetic waves and radio waves, TV and all that? Could there be some kind of wave, some kind of radiation from the brain that can account for ESP, of course, we relabeled the phenomenon to remote viewing because of a certain approach, which meant that the remote viewing, the way we defined it, was the ability of people to describe distant geographic areas. So the first objective initially was theoretical, can be explained from electromagnetics. Then when we had successes with the experiments, then it became of interest for operational use in the military. Could we locate missing airplanes? Could we locate hostages? And ultimately, could we actually use it as an intelligence tool? Could we describe areas in the Soviet Union and anticipate or perceive what was being developed on its secret bases there? So it had those two or three different aspects that really motivated the investigation into remote viewing in the early 70s.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever work with David Morehouse?
Yes, I did. He was on my group for a while, yes.
Oh, great. Yeah, I know him pretty well.
Okay.
He said one day he was checking with some of the beings I work with, and they told him he wasn't qualified to go into that level or something. It was kind of interesting.
Huh.
But it's kind of interesting. Now, I talked with, I'm trying to remember his name. There's another remote viewer that's very famous out there.
James?
No.
Brandigal?
Ingo Swan taught him.
Yeah. There's several that are quite visible.
McGonigal,
in the,
that's his name.
There's Joe McGonigal, there's...
Yeah, yeah. That's him.
Oh, yeah, Joe, sure, yeah,
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, and we had a really good conversation, and I started showing him photographs and pictures and then some actually drawings of these different beings that I'd run into.
Yeah.
And he'd never seen them. He didn't know what I was talking about. And then the more we talked about it, I realized that the remote viewing that they were doing was more like just going from one area to the other in this world.
Yes, that's right.
And just viewing, you know, what's there and where the walls are in the rooms and,
mm-hmm.
and all
that was
the
really the main focus and the way remote viewing was defined. By definition, the phenomenon of remote viewing was really limited to what could be perceived in this reality and evaluated in this reality.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a very practical aspect to that. We had to demonstrate results in order to get any kind of funding. Mm-hmm. And if you have information which is unverifiable in the sense of somehow or another getting ground truth, you know,
mm-hmm.
then people that are very pragmatic, that are in the budget line, chain of command, so to speak, would probably not be too enthused about funding it. So we had to focus on something that could be an experimental protocol that could be set up where the remote viewer was totally blind to any possibility of what the objective was, and then but it had to be an objective in this reality in order for quick feedback and easy evaluation. So that's sort of what drove, and which pretty much set the philosophy of remote viewing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that doesn't mean that from time to time other kinds of contact creep in, as you said, that there might be some bleed over or some overlap into something which is not in this type of the reality that we define as material reality. But it's usually not talked about very much by remote viewers. Now, I know some do, and some do have the experiences that are not what you might call of this world.
Uh-huh.
But it's not the focus of remote viewing, per se, as it was developed, especially by Inga Swann.
Yeah, well, pardon my curiosity, but have you had any of these experiences?
Well, the experiences that I've had, again, I guess I'm coming in from a physical science background.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the experiences I've had might be borderline along of what you're talking about, but I tend to see things in a energetic frame of mind, point of view. That is, there's certain energies that I can't really define. I can't really identify in any specific form. So maybe from the point of view of sensations or energetic senses, I've had things like that, but I can't put a label on it. So I don't know if the perception is a way the subconscious mind is connecting with all these energies, and I do believe there are a lot of energies in the universe, whether
mm-hmm.
you call them zero-point energy or some other technical term.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a matter of how we interpret our interaction with those energies. And I've had interactions, but I really don't know how to classify them.
Yeah. That's the problem, is putting words to the experience. And sometimes, you know, we just can't, you know, because there are no words.
We come up with analogies. And, I keep thinking back to, and I'm sure in your recent trip to Hawaii, you had nice discussions or deep discussions with the kahunas.
Yes.
But I know when I was there in the late 60s and had some discussions with kahunas, I did get to talk to one or two, to a few, particularly those that were connected with the Bishop Museum.
Mm-hmm.
And, I could understand some of the things they were talking about. Even then, I had an intuitive feel, although I was just beginning my study of the field, I felt very comfortable around them. I felt that they really had access to some higher dimensions or to some energetic, where some kind of energies exist that most of us don't usually have any inkling of. And, you know, until we have some kind of trauma or until we really seek to develop this kind of contact.
And with some of the experiences I had, their loved ones, some that died, actually appeared and gave me their name, and it was a name I was totally unfamiliar with, you know, because it was a Hawaiian name. And, you know, I tried to pronounce it and spelled it out, and it was right on the button. You know, so it was kind of interesting, and I would see the person's face, you know, and they were just coming in to say, hey, I'm okay, you know, like, let it go and let's move on.
Huh.
But it was quite an interesting experience. But
these were people that you knew then?
Yeah. Well, I knew the kahuna. I didn't know the people that were friends of theirs that crossed over.
Yeah, that's what I meant. You didn't know them.
Yeah, I had no idea who they were, and
names
were totally foreign to me.
Yeah. Huh.
And, you know, we had so many experiences that I would tell them what I experienced, and then they would tell me, oh, that's this ancestor, or, you know, everything from Holly Lakala, I can't even say her name, appearing to me, and then I end up running into Pele and all these different beings, and they do exist on these higher dimensions.
Yeah, there's some kind of existence, and I really, you know, I can't possibly come close to saying what it is, but
mm-hmm.
but there is a representation of these entities, and they're real in that sense. And people like Kahunas and others that have developed their sensitivities, I think, can more routinely access these. There are others too. I have a lot of material here in my study that I'm sitting in right now as we talk here in the East Coast, of experiences that people have, and particularly of individuals that work with, say, emergency EMTs or the medical field, and there are a few people that actually perceive when individuals pass over in an accident. And some of these energies, however you want to define it, are actually there, present at the scene, even though the body has been declared dead. So, and so some of these emergency people can sense that. You know, they're not developed kahunas,
yeah,
but they have that unique link because of the close connection to life and death as part of their profession.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's attuned them more to those sensitivities than perhaps the general population.
You know, I've always felt like on a physics level, you know, with energy can neither be created or destroyed. It's ongoing. And if you go to the next level, or light or consciousness, all of those things are ongoing. So it would just make common sense that they exist somewhere.
Yeah, right. And that's a good point about the energy and not being able to be destroyed. I don't know. The creation part is another question. At some point, these energies were created, but then again, you know, you get into a lot of cosmology here, and you know what really started everything. And I just saw a program on the History Channel last night or two nights ago on the origin of the universe. You know, the current thinking is the Big Bang theory.
Yeah.
But it still leaves you wondering what, even though it's an incredible concept, and it makes sense given the information that's coming out of astronomy and these
mm-hmm.
incredible measurements that can now be made with satellites that look back to the time of when this event occurred, which is mm-hmm. named the Big Bang. But what was it before, you know?
Yeah, that's what I have a theory on that, and you might shed some light on that as a physicist, but I've always felt, you know, you can't have expansion without contraction. Like, everything is balanced. And so before the Big Bang, something had to contract down to, like, that zero point or collapse the energy, and then it exploded outward in a radioactive, you know, you have to have a generative program along with a radioactive program, but we never look at the other side of the equation. We just think there's a Big Bang, and then that's it.
Well, some theories are coming out now, it's not so much a Big Bang as a big bounce.
Uh-huh.
And the term bounce refers to an oscillating kind of creation, that the universe we live in now had this singular event, a point, which we call a Big Bang, but prior to that was another kind of cycling universe that shrunk down and then expanded out again.
Mm-hmm.
So into the universe we now see and call this universe, this perceivable universe. But prior to that, it was another one that collapsed down, and then
and on.
But so you have this infinite regression.
Mm-hmm.
So you still end up almost in a circle. You know?
And everything is constantly recycled, and there really is no time. You know,
right, so
know
there's no time.
It's
and it's weird because you know once you start thinking about what was before the before the before, you just can't get anywhere. You know, you do get somewhere. You get going around in a circle, and then the conclusion is there was no beginning and no end. And, you know, it's not that it was totally timeless, but that the cycle just goes on and on and has been and will be.
Mm-hmm.
It's a hard concept to even think about.
Yeah, the ancient Vedic scriptures talk about that, you know, about no time, that everything is on and on and on, and, you know, there was no beginning, no ending. And
yeah.
And almost all the ancient traditions, when you get into it, seem to have that same story.
Right, the cycling idea. You know, at first, when I first thought about this many years ago, I thought this was sort of a fallout from just looking at the cycles of the Earth, the winter, summer, spring, fall cycles, as a repeating of summer every year, for example. But the more I got into it, the more I realized this is just an approximation to something even greater than that. The whole area of creation of the universe is in a cyclic mode.
Yeah, it's the microcosm of the macrocosm.
Yeah, and you know, I don't want to get into something too esoteric because the whole field is kind of esoteric. But but when you start talking about dark matter and dark energy, and cosmologists and astrophysicists tell us that 97% of the universe is dark matter and dark energy. You know, 97%. Good grief. And they'll be the first to admit, physicists and cosmologists will be the first to admit, they have no foggiest idea what this is.
Well,
the effects can be detected.
I think, what are they saying, like a cubic inch of dark matter has the potential for a whole universe?
Yeah, you know, it's so incredible, you know. So and every now and then I think about this, but not very long.
Uh-huh.
It's fun to think about. But it's when I think about ESP and that, you know, this is why I was never really too bothered by psi phenomenon, which is a kind of a technical term for ESP and remote viewing. If the universe that we're now looking at is so strange, and particularly when you talk about quantum physics aspects of it, which works, and we're quite comfortable with the fruits of quantum physics. Look at the world we live in today. What would we do without quantum electronic devices? But it's just such a... I'm not at all puzzled anymore about ESP. You know, the rest of the universe is probably, seems in my mind, even weirder, even stranger. So it's a weird place we live in.
Now, I look at the numbers and the odds, you know, and we have, I don't know what the numbers are now. I know we have something like 500 billion suns in the Milky Way alone or something. I know there are 200, no, I think it was 200 billion, and they've found at least 500 billion galaxies out there. And, you know, you look at the numbers alone, and I just can't even comprehend that you know, the Earth is the only place with life on it. And then you add all the other dimensions to that, you know, the different dimensions, and it's so mind-boggling. The odds of us being the only ones here are some billion trillion to one or something. It's beyond ridiculous.
Yeah, this is why I don't have any problem either when you think about this, that there has to be intelligent life elsewhere. You know, just to say that it was an accident, as many scientific people say, that life is kind of an accidental result of natural processes on the Earth, which I really have a lot of suspicion about that. That there's more than accident involved, but that moves you into another dimension of talk.
Mm-hmm.
But the idea of life on other planets. Whether they're in this galaxy or in Andromeda or even the more distant ones, there's got to be some type of intelligent life. And you know, these programs that have the radio telescopes listening for the signals, the SETI, the extraterrestrial intelligence. I think they're on the right track, but I'm not so sure they're looking at the right phenomenon.
Yeah.
In quantum physics, there's this, as you probably are well aware, there is this this phenomenon called non-local effects. And somehow, I would think that somehow in the future, if communication devices could be set up that are more aligned toward the detecting non-local signals, and there's some debate whether the phenomenon can be used in a signal processing mode, but I really think it can. Nature is very interesting in that it finds a way to use things. Evolution points that out. So I would think in the future, if we can shift to a different kind of detection system, if we're talking about technical detection, not the detection that perhaps we already can do in a certain sense through our subconscious mind, you know, that's another avenue, I think, that needs to be explored.
Yeah, our own brains are probably the best radio we'll ever come
across. Yeah, and in fact, I wouldn't be a bit surprised if since ESP works, and there's no question in my mind, I've spent half a lifetime on the topic, and not just remote viewing, but all aspects of ESP and precognition. And if that phenomenon can work at any point on Earth, why could it not work at any point elsewhere, to other planets?
And a more developed civilization would probably have more of a spiritual form of technology and would be incorporating their own senses into the system.
Yeah, all this talk about advanced technology and developing systems that use space warp or some kind of technical device to go approach the speed of light, these are all very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that they're missing a point here, in that the mind already can bust time.
Yeah.
And so why not take a look at how people that are trained or that are developed along this capacity to, you might say, tune in to these other sources of intelligence. You know, I think maybe people already do that. I'm just not aware of all the activities going on.
You know, I saw here that you're on a series, A&E series, and we had, they came out here, Paranormal State came out.
Yeah.
With A&E. And we gave them on several occasions, we told them exactly when and where the ships were going to power up and appear. And their cameras running, and they appeared exactly on time.
Oh, boy.
Which we've done this redundantly. We even did it with ABC, and unfortunately they didn't air it, but they have the footage.
Oh.
And we do this all the time, and to me, it's a repeatable event. They show up exactly on time. We have the cameras ready for them when they come in, and we get them on film, so it's documented. And I don't see how anybody in their right mind could say there isn't communication going on when you have a repeatable event like that.
Yeah, it is definitely a form of communication. It sounds like some kind of signaling process. Now, I live not too far from Penn State, where the Paranormal State people operate from.
Uh-huh.
And I was up there last year, and I did give a talk there. So I'm quite well aware of their process and how they go about doing their investigations. It's, in my view, it's one of the better approaches that I've seen that's in the media, in the public eye. So I would assume when they were out at your place, I did see that program, and of course I'm sure a lot of it was edited out.
Oh yeah,
yeah, because you shoot a lot, and you know 90% ends up on the floor.
Yeah.
So I don't know what they kept in or well, I knew what they kept in from what was presented, but I would imagine there's a lot of stuff they didn't present.
Well, we had the sound of the ships, and we had the ships coming in through infrared, you know, flying by, just beautiful sound of this frequency modulation going on, and, you know, the ships. And there's a lot of things they didn't put in there because it just, they just said it's too real.
Yeah, I could tell that from some of the innuendos in the script, in the dialogue that occurred at the end there.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's something that one guy was I think Coffey, Jeff Coffey,
yeah,
is that his
name? Yeah.
I think he was really taken by the experience, but he couldn't go too far because he figured it would be cut from the air.
Yeah, we both got the same information, and he, as soon as he came on, he's their Chip Coffey.
Chip Coffey.
He came on, he says, oh my God, he goes, the energy here is overwhelming. He couldn't even get tuned to it. It was like phasing him out. He said, if I stay here any longer, I'm going to be unconscious or gone.
Yeah. But it actually opens up a whole new area of discussion from my point of view. Again, I've been, most of my life, I've been thinking about, since I became I was an aeronautical engineer for a while,
mm-hmm.
I've been thinking about not only aircraft, but space travel. I was on the space programs back in the 60s. So I have to start changing my way of thinking that travel, assuming then that what's going on here is really representative of some kind of extraterrestrial contact, which it appears to be, then the question is, how does this occur? I don't think it's a physical thing that can go from a huge distant galaxy to here. There has to be some transition,
mm-hmm.
Something that goes from the physical to the non-physical back to the physical. Wouldn't you think so?
Oh, that's exactly, they explained it to me. I've been in telepathic contact for some time with them, and they explained to me how their ships operate. And they said they actually fly, you know, more as a light principle, not as even beyond that. But it's wherever they put their thoughts, the ship responds, and it raises its frequency. And some of the ships, they said, are physical, and they have to raise the frequency up to an energy or to a light principle, and they just keep jumping the frequency up, and then they shoot from one spot to the next. But they said it's not done, you know, they said it'd take them forever to get here.
Even at light speed. That's why I'm wondering. Even at light speed, it would take a long time.
It takes several years.
Yeah.
You know,
even from some of the nearest galaxies,
galaxies. They found a way to, they kind of warp time, distance, and space, and they fold it in on itself, and so they can jump extremely long distances by, you know, with their technology. And I don't have all the details for it because I'm not a physicist, so I couldn't even...
Well, there are some theories out there from the mathematical side.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the cute terms like wormholes.
Yeah.
So there are mathematical ways of showing that space-time could be warped and fold back into itself. And you might say cut corners, huge corners, and just go and travel, if you could, through these wormholes.
Oh, yeah.
But the energies required to do this are astronomical. So something else must happen. So,
yeah, I found out several things. One is that there's a lot of them based here, and they've been here for quite a long time. And so they're coming from the interior. So some of them are those. And then we have our own back-engineered things, you know, they're flying around out there. And some of the people are seeing those. And then we have the off-worlders coming in, and they're, some of their craft are physical craft. Some are more of an energy or a plasma craft, and some are... just pure light ships. They have a magnetized light body and a light ship, you might say. And so they have technologies and they're so advanced, it seems like eventually we would become less dense physical the more we evolve. And as we became less dense physical, we didn't really need a physical body anymore. We'd become more like an energy being, and then it would just go on and on to a light being and then just pure consciousness.
Yeah, it almost kind of reminds me of something else here. That if something physical can disappear, you might say,
mm-hmm.
one spot of the universe and then reappear somewhere else, whatever that mechanism or procedure is. Maybe the word mechanism isn't a good term here. But whatever that process is, it sort of reminds me a little bit of what can occur here with some people occasionally, a phenomenon called poltergeistry.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where some individuals unconsciously have the ability to have objects move from point A to point B. Of course, there's a lot of fraud and suspicion with these poltergeist outbreaks. But if you look at it from a phenomenon point of view, phenomenological point of view, it appears that in some cases, they're well documented.
Mm-hmm.
that an object actually did, you might say, dematerialize and then rematerialize. So if that really happened, and I think it has happened, then there is the concept, there is the principle right there.
Yeah,
you know, then the issue is, how do you then turn this, which is basically an unconscious phenomenon right now, non-controllable, how would you turn that into the kind of experiences then that you are observing from these other, you might call, extraterrestrial travelers? If maybe that's what they've done. They've gone beyond and understood what the poltergeist phenomena are,
mm-hmm.
and found a way to develop that into a controllable effect.
Yeah, the ancient Tibetan ways and the yogis and things like that, it's very well documented that they have the ability, some of them have the ability to bilocate and dematerialize and do things of that nature. One of the lamas that I knew, I saw a photograph of him where you could see right through him, and you could see a tonka behind him on the wall. And so if that is a natural ability that we all have latent within us, one would think that it wouldn't be too much harder to develop, you know, a kind of a spiritual technology that would operate on the same principles. And they could, like the ships here, I have footage of this one ship coming over the top of the mountain that drops down, and all of a sudden it turns into three ships from one.
Oh, okay. So there's, it's as if it's, I'm going to say mental projection, but it appears that some kind of mind intention is involved here that can direct it and have it change short shape and form in a way. I don't know, maybe what I said isn't quite right, but it's something like that.
There's some way of doing it, because we have it on film and we tell people to explain this one and they just walk away baffled, because they seem to be able to morph into different shapes, sizes. When they come over the ranch here, they power up and they light the whole field up, and you feel a pulse go through your body. And, you know, everybody gets real giddy, you know, really, it really lifts the energy when they come in. And we had over 300 people standing out in the field here, you know, at one of the conferences, and the ships came in and they pulsed everybody in the field. And, boy, everybody was hooting and hollering and screaming, and most of them said, they didn't say, did you see that? A lot of them said, did you feel that?
Oh, I see. You know, that's interesting, because I've been in sessions. Have you ever attended healing sessions?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, well, sometimes that kind of feeling occurs when you're close to a healer going through a very traumatic healing process,
mm-hmm.
or event, where the people in the audience feel that same kind of giddiness. So there's some kind of energy that the healer is drawing, that or emitting. I don't know which way it's going.
Mm-hmm.
Then those present are caught up in that field, and I'm using the term field because that's sort of a physics word that refers to something we don't understand. It's just a good word, but there's something there in the vicinity of what we're immersed in, this field. That is drawn, maybe not drawn, but maybe there's some kind of frequency tuning going on that we weren't aware of before, that the healer in this situation allowed us to feel. Does that make sense to you?
Oh, yeah. A lot of it's the presence of the higher beings coming in that are the helpers, which goes into something I experienced in Hawaii. There's a beautiful woman I met by the name of Lila. She does animal healing and counseling and helps people with their animals. It's kind of like an animal psychology dash communication thing. And she had a huge opening when we got together. And the next thing you know, she just went out of her body, and a master came in and just stared in everybody's eyes, and people just went through an incredible transition having the experience. But that wasn't even the most bizarre one. The most bizarre one was that she said she had these healing doctors that worked with her. And she said she was going to send them to work on me at night. And so I'm laying there in bed, and I'm half asleep. My head's turned the other way, and something grabs my toe and pulls on it and lifts my leg up. I mean, it actually lifted my leg up. And I thought it was this friend of mine, and I turned around, and I looked, and there was a little enough light in the room, and I was going to go real funny, you know, and there was nobody there.
Oh, my goodness.
In the room, and it was so physical. It wasn't like maybe I felt something. I mean, they actually grabbed my foot, which was strange.
Huh. Well, did you have any other physical thing happen? You know, did you need some kind of healing in some area?
Oh, yeah, I definitely did. And then I felt energy moving. I felt them doing work on my body because I've had some back injuries and some other things. And I felt all this work happening on my body. And it was, and I could see the guy. All of a sudden, I could see him. I kept getting pictures of him, and you know. And then she told me his name and what he looked like, and that was exactly who I saw.
Oh, then you actually did see some kind of form. Or
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah. I started to
see
him, and then the second one came. And she wore this outfit, and I explained exactly what this outfit looked like to one of the people there. He was a Kunlun master teaching us this Tibetan art.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, oh, that's the emperor's nuns that work on the emperor. And he said that the outfit you're explaining sounds exactly like the ones that come, you know, they come in spirit as well. And they stuck to, I felt her put two needles in each side of my hips because I'm having some hip and lower back problems, and I felt all this energy just surge into that area, and it was just phenomenal, and so it was just one thing after another there, and the one that blew my mind was, you know, you don't grab somebody's toe and lift their leg up off the ground like that and not, you know, create a reaction, because that just blew me away. And you know, luckily I didn't get into fear or anything because I knew that they were coming to work on me. So I just, you know, allowed them to do the work.
Yeah, I can see why if you weren't expecting that, it could be very unnerving.
Yeah, most people would jump up and run out of the room and turn on the light.
Yeah, I had a friend of mine, actually a relative, that was traveling in one of the western states, southwestern states last year. Staying in a supposedly a hotel that was had a haunted room,
mm-hmm.
And apparently they were in that room or close to it, and during the night he had a feeling where somebody came in and actually sat on his leg. He felt it pressed down.
Mm-hmm.
So whatever this residual energy was in that room or that hotel, that it may relate a little bit to the kind of experience you're talking about, although it sounds like what my friend experienced was kind of undirected, you know, it just sort of an effect.
Yeah.
It didn't have a particular goal. Like in your case, you had this goal of interaction and healing that apparently came through. How far away was the person that you were dealing with?
They're in the next room.
Okay, so they weren't too far away.
No, they were just right in the next room.
So I don't know how it would be at a distance, although I have heard stories and read accounts of some energy like this transferable,
mm-hmm.
or the effects of it are felt even at great distances when a certain healer, say here in the East Coast, would intend to have someone feel or recover from some illness, where you are, the effects would be felt even transcontinentally. So there is that across, you know, huge distance, and not just limited to in the same building.
Yeah, it'd be instantaneous because it's consciousness, you know, interacting, you know, consciousness to consciousness, you might say, or
yeah.
Or,
so again, it doesn't surprise me
mm-hmm.
because ESP, psi, remote viewing are independent of distance, and of course, if that's true, they need to have some independence of time.
Mm-hmm.
So whatever the energy is, whether it's energy or just an informational part of the energy, which psi phenomena seems to be more informational, but healing energies are more energetic. At least they have that effect.
Mm-hmm.
So even that form is apparently independent of distance.
Yeah, I had the one of the kahunas work on me, and I do, I have total recall of past life experiences, things like that, and I knew one of them I just couldn't shake. I couldn't get off of me, and I had a spear run through my back, And so we had her work on me, and she did Lomi Lomi, and she goes, "You got this big shaft going through you." She could see on another level and took that out. And I've had all kinds of stomach problems in that area and lower back problems and everything, and they seem to have gone away, so I can't really argue with that one. And
no, I can't argue with success. What islands were you on?
I was on mostly on Maui for 2 weeks, and then I was asked to come and participate in these Kunlun classes, which are come out of Tibet. You know, they had the Kunlun temple there.
Yeah.
And so I went there and had some experiences. Now it even gets weirder because the person that shoved, I actually went there to have that healed. That was one of the main reasons I went to Hawaii is to do some talks and have that healed.
Mm-hmm.
And so the person that actually ran the shaft through my back was there in Hawaii, and I spun around and cut her throat. It was a guy at the time. You know, in the vision, I saw it real clearly, and they came there too to be healed, and so we had to both clean up the path in that experience. And no matter what we did, we could not run into each other. Everywhere we went, we kept running into each other. And it was a very heavy experience.
That must have been, and I'm sure you finally got around to turning your back to the individual too.
Yeah. We finally healed it and let it go on both
sides.
So it was quite amazing, but. The funny part of it was the odds of us running into each other, no matter where we went, again and again, it was like it was all orchestrated, and there was no way either one of us was going to get away from.
You're not dwelling into the world of synchronicity.
Yeah.
I mean, well, while you were there,
that. It went beyond synchronicity. It was like there's this.
Yeah, I see. Yeah, it sure did.
Yeah.
While you were there, was there anything about the volcanoes? Because I'd seen some specials on TV lately about uprisings or disturbances in the Hawaii volcanoes.
Oh, yeah. We went down there, and it's going off, and it's going out into the ocean. You know, it's pretty massive right now, and the fog is terrible.
Oh, because when I lived there, Kailua, the small volcano, Kailua, Iki,
mm-hmm.
Had done some erupting, which it hadn't done for a long time, for a century, for maybe a couple hundred years. So I think that would be one that would be potentially blowing too, because it's always been.
Yeah, over on the Big Island, that was just going
on
like crazy, so it was. You know, people were having a lot of trouble there with the air quality.
Yeah, and then the earthquake thing too. Apparently, the two kind of go together. I don't know which causes the one or the other, but I didn't realize when the earthquake hit Hawaii a couple of years ago on the Big Island, it also disrupted the power on Oahu, 100 miles away. So that's a huge connection there. Yeah, I would imagine that they would be on top of it, so to speak. And maybe you would be the first to know. The kahunas would be the first to know when there was something really imminent.
You know,
I hope they're connected with the U.S. the Geodesic Society there.
Yeah. You know, all of us there have been having the wave dream, the big wave, you know, the tsunami dream coming in a couple of years. And so, you know, I was wondering if you have have you seen any premonitions on that or any future events of that nature?
Occasionally, yes. The problem is timing.
Yeah.
And that's a part that I really have not been too successful at, other than my 5-day in the future thing. And that doesn't do you a lot of good for long-term planning.
Yeah.
Every now and then I'll have one of those.
We need to see a clock floating in the wave.
There must be a way of linking time to this with a more reliability. I know some people do seem to have a pretty good handle on the timing aspects.
The end of the show, unfortunately, I know we could probably go on and on. I'll have to get you back on the show again. But before we leave, can you give your contact information out if anybody wants to take any of your remote viewing classes?
I have my email is mountain. I'll spell it out. Emails are hard. MTMVIEWER, Mountain Viewer. I'll repeat. Mountain Viewer @DaleGraff.
Okay.
I'm sorry. I've got my web page and my email mixed up.
I think it's Delgraph, right?
Yeah.
.com.
Right, Delgraph.com.
Yeah, we have that on the website.
Yeah, right, okay. I do this every time, and I try to mix my email and my web page. They always come out wrong. So if you put that up on your information, then they can contact me.
Great.
Yeah.
Do you have anything coming up real soon?
Yeah, I'm working on a book right now, so I'm kind of slowing down on my external contacts. But I do have some workshops in the area here in eastern Pennsylvania.
Oh, good.
They're coming up, and perhaps in Long Island area.
Great.
So that's coming up this spring.
That'll be on your website?
Yeah, I need to update my website. It's grossly out of date because when I moved from Maryland to Pennsylvania a few years ago, I kind of left it slip, so I need to update it. Things developed by word of mouth, so I haven't really been advertising or putting a lot up in my web page, but I will be doing that in the next couple of weeks, updating everything.
Well, unfortunately, we're out of time.
Oh, okay. Well, listen, it's been enjoyable, and I hope to chat more and learn more about your incredible experiences, too, sometime.
Well, definitely. We'll have to get you out at the ranch here, and you can have some experiences out along with us.
Okay, right, and we'll see what happens.
All right. Well, have a great evening, and thanks so much for coming on the show.
Okay, well, thank you again. Bye.
All right, this is James Gillen with As You Wish Talk Radio signing off. It's great to be back from Hawaii. And have a great evening. Good night.